From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we are celebrating the 100th episode of Control ClickCast. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is sponsored by the inaugural .all conference for Craft CMS developers. .all 2017 is taking place on October 22nd and 23rd in Portland, Oregon, and will feature a Craft 3 workshop led by Ryan Ireland of Majingo, a plugin development lab, and a full day of sessions relevant to Craft and web development. For more information and to buy your ticket, visit dotall.com. That's dotall.com. Hope to see you there. This episode is also sponsored by Studio VO. Studio VO is a service design and design research consultancy located in Portland, Oregon, with projects worldwide. They can help you make your products and services better. And they love Leigh and Emily. Yes, they use their ad copy to make us say that. Because love. Studio VO. People are weird. We figured out why. So I'm afraid we're going to dive into cliches about time flying when you're having fun. But it's true. Can you believe we've reached a 100 episode milestone?
Not only that, but it's 100 episodes again.
Right. If you're just tuning into the show, a quick summary. Control ClickCast was originally the EE podcast, and we celebrated 100 episodes of that almost exactly 4 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And just like last time, Em and I are going to be recounting all our favorite episodes.
But what's different this time is we're also going to talk about what you, our listeners, like about the show. It's going to be a love fest. We'll be sharing some of your reviews as well as your favorite episodes, our top three downloads, along with our favorites.
Awesome. So let's start with positivity. This is a review from Terri-Ann Glover, who wrote us a great note along with a donation. So this is what she wrote. You guys are really helping me to be a better developer. Thank you for such a diverse set of topics and in-depth look at tools and the business. You are who I needed years ago when I first got into this all on my own. Continue to be amazing. Well, this is pretty much 90% why I love doing the show.
Yeah, it never gets old to hear how much our listeners like the show. And what's really funny is we didn't start paying attention to the reviews until a few years ago.
I know.
And we're only just now starting to kind of put them out there. But we read them. We read them once a month.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So now that we've had a little bit of a listener perspective, let's jump into some of our favorite episodes. So Leah, why don't you start?
All right. So for one of my first favorite episodes, I want to highlight a really design-centric episode.
Of course, you're a designer.
Yeah. Well, while our show focuses on a lot of CMSs and dev, you know, I want to make sure that listeners know that we dive deep into singular design topics too.
Yes.
I mean, I personally love discussing the nitty-gritty of design work and its thought process. So speaking of, here's a clip from episode 63 where Jerry Cody explains how important color is to web design.
So why is color so important to design in all areas of design?
Well, it's not just an aesthetic thing, which I think a lot of people, especially designers and developers, kind of think it is. You know, it's not just an afterthought that something you're going to add, you know, you design a bunch of wireframes and add the color in later. It's important because it's so emotional. You know, it's got a lot of meaning and message behind it, different cultures, all that sort of thing. But, you know, it can also help create hierarchy in a design. You know, it can help draw your attention to certain areas of the page. It can help, you know, the user on their flow through a website. It's not just aesthetic at all. You know, all that sort of thing is going to affect how a person can use a website. So it's definitely you know, more interactive. It's more critical for web design because you can't really control how a person on the internet is going to view your website. Like, everybody knows mm-hmm. this with responsive design and that sort of thing. And the same right. thing, like, you can't really control how somebody is going to see your website in terms of color. So it's definitely very important to think about for that reason in web design.
I like how she emphasizes that design choices don't come out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my first fave is out of the way. How about you, Em? What's one of your favorites?
Well, when I was trying to figure out what a favorite was, because you and I both know how much we pretty much like every episode, mm-hmm. I wanted to figure out what I love about the show itself. And so I picked three episodes, each of which represent an example of why I host the show and why I get so much out of it myself. Being inspired, being introduced to new ways of thinking, and learning ways to be better at what I do. Mm-hmm. And so the first episode I wanted to share is the one we did with the Fly Duo, which was something that really inspired me. Sherry and Ruben really affirmed that you can be yourself and still find success in this industry.
Which it's kind of, I guess, one of those things was a learning process, because through doing it that way and trying to go in a direction that they wanted us to go in, we realized how much it can be detrimental to your business and how you see your business if you operate in a way that's not really the way that your gut and your brain and your research is telling you you need to go. So
right.
we ended up, you know, we course corrected. We brought our brand back to where we wanted it to be.
Yeah, it took and us then a while, though. It took us a lot of years of being lukewarm, as we call it, like somewhere yeah. in the middle of not really people like super excited about us, but nobody really not loving us either. But, you know, lukewarm is not really the best right. place to be either.
Yeah.
So right. we spent a lot of years there. So when we branded 2 years ago, we were like, we're going all in or we're going all out, because we weren't happy. So we were like, mm-hmm. we're going to speak our language to the people that we're speaking to and not worry about everybody else. And that's where you get what we got. You get us. And we pretty much are like our client, you know?
I think you can even tell from the clip how open they are. Mm-hmm. I felt like I got to know them, which is a bonus of doing the show, building relationships with our guests. So how about you, Leah? What's another of your favorites?
Well, I feel like my next fave episode should be top of mind. It reminds people that we're designing for humans. And as a designer, I think it's important to note that people will be interacting with your site, right? Mm. And it's a great reminder that our user experience and design decisions can directly affect someone's thought process and mood. Mm-hmm. So here's Beth Dean giving a real world example on how ignoring context and the people using your site can have consequences.
Mm. To kind of summarize what you were talking about, one of the ways I think we've approached software design for a really long time is that we don't want to create friction for people, right? Friction right. is frustration. If they go through an experience and there's a lot of friction, they're not going to be happy. And that sort of assumes that they're coming into our designs in a good place to begin with. And people aren't always. So when you think about, why might I be checking my bank balance? Is it because I need to pay a bill and maybe there's not enough money in my bank account? Why am I logging into my insurance policy? Is it because I just had an accident? I feel like maybe the best way for me to describe this is by examples of where it's not working. Is that okay with you ladies?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
So one anecdote I have from when I worked in insurance. So like I was saying, insurance rating is very complicated. People generally don't understand it. They don't know why their rate costs what it does. So we were going to do a test where we wanted to show people their credit score as they went through the process of buying insurance, because we thought this would help them understand how we assessed what kind of risk they presented to us. And this sounded kind of good on the surface, right? We wanted to increase transparency and tell people a little bit more about how this was working. And when we got into the test, this woman was confronted with her score when she was not expecting it, and it was very low. And it turned out that she had been bankrupted a few years in the past by a huge medical catastrophe. And it just devastated her family, and they were living with the fallout of this for years. And she just was not expecting to be confronted with this number and burst into tears in the middle of our test. And, you know, we just thought, oh, more information is always better. You know, we had no idea the ramifications of such a thing. And I feel like a lot of people, designers today, are experiencing moments like that, where they have this information and people are more vulnerable than they ever were before. And we just don't think about the impact of what it might be like to see things when we aren't expecting them.
I'm really glad how Beth emphasized the real reaction to a real test that she was a part of, because these concerns aren't just theoretical. They're real and they're relevant.
And that's another thing I love about the guests that we've had on our show. They've been so open, not only sharing technical knowledge, but real personal experiences that have informed their technical knowledge. It's so practical.
Yeah, that's what I love about this show.
Mm-hmm.
So, Em, what's another episode you love?
Well, this is a show that we just had. It's episode 99, so the one right before this one. Laurie Voss was our guest, and he talked with us about web development trends. And what was most surprising for me about our conversation, and an example of what I love doing the show, is he changed one of my own perspectives. It's really refreshing to think something for a really long time and then just have someone present it to you in a different way.
Yeah.
And I think if you've listened to the show, you know that I've long advocated for web fundamentals. As a front-end dev, to me, that's like web standards, building with accessibility and progressive enhancement in mind. And really, for me, I've always believed that in order to do that, you really need to understand the code you write. And it's why I don't kind of like things like frameworks. But while I will always be a believer in best practices, Laurie really offered some food for thought on what fundamentals really are.
I think I probably take a different position on fundamentals to you, if only because after 21 years in the business, I'm not sure what people think of as being fundamental anymore. When I started web development, the first book that I ever bought to teach me web development, the very first thing that the book taught me was CGI. They were like, this is the CGI. This is the CGI protocol. This is how you write a piece of software that knows how to speak HTTP. Because there were no frameworks. There was nothing. There was nothing that knew how to speak HTTP out right off the bat. And so it was like, you're going to be writing, you know, we assume that you're writing either Perl or C, because this is 1995 and PHP hasn't been developed yet and neither has JavaScript. And you're going to have to write from scratch a web server. Like, they did not assume the existence of Apache, far less Nginx or any of the rest of them. And they were like, so these are the fundamentals. Here you go. And instead of teaching you HTML, the book taught you SGML, which most people don't even remember anymore. Mm-hmm. SGML was like this meta language that HTML is just one application of. And so when I hear people talking about, oh, you've got to get to the fundamentals of HTML, I'm like, no, HTML is a framework. All of computers are frameworks on top of frameworks on top of frameworks. Everything is an abstraction on top of another abstraction. And the stack is so big and so complicated that it's impossible for anybody to know every layer of the stack. The idea that there's a full stack developer is a myth. Like, the stack has 45 levels. If you've got 10 of them, you're doing really well, but you're not a full stack developer. And nobody is. So if the very first thing somebody learns is how to build an app in React and Redux, and that's all that they know how to do, they're fine. They can build, you know, 95% of web apps. And if they need to do something complicated that that thing can't do, then they'll figure it out. They'll break out of the abstraction eventually. But I think I can't define what a fundamental is when it comes to web development, and therefore it probably isn't a real thing.
And so, as I mentioned, this was our last episode, number 99, and I think that just goes to show you that even after 6 years, I still get so much out of this show.
I know. This is what I love about it. There's always something new.
Yeah.
So now to our last favorites. So far, I've chosen a lot of design-centric episodes, and my final favorite is no different. You know, sometimes people think designers work in a black box or that we're just pulling decisions out of a hat. Yeah, maybe some designers do. I don't know. But this episode with Matthew Oliphant about data-driven design really resonated with me. I personally loved discussing the delicate balance of data and logic with your personal judgment. I think that's the sticking point. Because numbers and behavior, they actually mean nothing unless you actually decide to do something about that data. Yeah. So don't just execute a job. Make sure it's in line with the business goals. So here's Matthew talking about a popular user experience test and questioning its utility.
I'll say that I don't really like eye tracking or mouse tracking, especially like for mouse tracking, because I've watched so many tests where people spin the mouse around the screen while they're thinking. And it's like, well, okay, that really doesn't help me decide anything. So I don't really care for that kind of testing. I know that there's people who build businesses around it, and I hope that they're being successful, but I don't really care for it. I don't mind A-B testing in general, but it's got to be something where you're getting statistically significant results. So if you can generate 10,000 to 100,000 results over the course of a day or a week, A-B testing will tell you maybe what is happening. But the way I use A-B testing is to inform me what questions to go ask. Like, it informs what questions I go ask when I go out and talk to people. I don't like to use it to inform design decisions directly, because it doesn't tell you what the motivation is for people. It just tells you what they're doing.
I love that he's even testing the test. You know, again, emphasizing that just because it's well known doesn't mean the technique is right for the project. So with that in mind, what's the last episode you wanted to highlight, Em?
So this episode that I picked is the final thing, the final reason that I, you know, really love doing this show, and that's about learning to be better at what I do. So our episode with Dan Malm, we chatted about professionalism. And there was so much good information that he shared. And just a really refreshing and well-reasoned perspective on how to be a better professional.
One of the things that I hold as high as communication is accountability. And it certainly goes hand in hand with, with communication. And it's tough to nail down, like, what does accountability mean? And what does it mean when you're accountable to someone or somebody's accountable to you? I went to a conference 2 years ago called Brooklyn Beta. And there was a great speaker at Brooklyn Beta, Cory Booker, who was at the time, he was, I believe, the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and now is, I think, a senator. And he spoke about accountability, because one of the things that was famous about the way that he ran his administration in New Jersey was that things were getting done, you know, and it's like one of the most crime-ridden cities in the world. But suddenly, when he became the mayor, he turned a lot of things around. And a lot of people attribute that to his use of like social media and technology. And so one of the questions somebody asked him was, well, how do you get your staff to actually commit to change and do it? You know, is it that you guys use Twitter a lot, or is it that you guys use technology? And he's like, it has nothing to do with that. It has all to do with accountability. And so the follow-up question was, well, what do you mean by that? And he gave a formula for accountability, which I'll never forget. He said, accountability means three things. So the first thing in accountability is that you need to have a standard. And that's a thing that everyone has to accept and agree to, right? So whatever that standard is, it could be a high standard or a low standard or medium standard, but everyone just has to agree to it. The second thing is that you have to have a way to measure that standard. So a standard for us might be you come into work at 10 o'clock, right? That's a standard that we all agree to. If somebody comes in at 10:05, they have not met that standard. If somebody comes in at 9:55, they have met that standard, like pretty easy to measure. And then the third thing is that you need to have consequences for that standard not being met. And those consequences can be both positive and negative. So if somebody comes in at 9:55, maybe they get a reward for coming in early. If somebody comes in at 10:05, maybe they get penalized for coming in late. So that's a bit of a silly example, but accountability sort of has those three points to it. So when I try to work with people on teams, I try to establish what the accountability is. So how am I accountable to you? What standard are we going to agree to? How are we going to measure that? And then what are we going to do if it doesn't happen? And what are we going to do if it does? I think that's probably what I like most about the people that I do like working with most, is that the commonality is that they're the most accountable people that I know. So when I work with people that are very accountable, it almost doesn't matter how good the quality of work is. I just know that whatever they say they're they're going to do, they're going to do. So if I say, hey, can you build this thing that you've never built before? Yes, great. I can trust that that's going to get done. And so I think that's one of the things, that's one of the things that I also hold as highly as sort of the communication part is definitely accountability. I love working with accountable people. It makes me more accountable and it challenges me to do that. And so I think there's this really great thing that's being built up when you work with a lot of accountable people on a team.
So again, this episode is representative of that learning factor that I love about the show. I firmly believe I'm a better business owner and a better developer and even a better partner to Leia because of the tips like Dan's that I've picked up from the show. I don't think I'm have a skewed perspective when I say it's a gold mine of information.
Right. I mean, I feel like we're one of those ads where it's like, I'm a client.
Right. You know, I'm not just the president of Hair Club. I'm also a client.
That's how it feels like to me. Yeah. So enough about us for a moment. Let's talk about our listeners' favorite episodes.
Yes.
But before we do that, let's talk about another review.
Okay. So PJack72 on iTunes wrote to us, "This one is definitely on my listen to religiously list. As experienced and expert practitioners, Leia and Emily know how to dive deep and pull out valuable details while framing topics in the context of fundamentals. Their lively, friendly manner makes you feel like you're right there sharing your social beverage of choice and leaves you feeling more knowledgeable and inspired. Keep up the awesome work." And that's 90% of why I do the show, sharing information and teaching. That stuff feels so good. We need, you know what, every day we should read one of these reviews before we start work.
I know. I mean, sometimes it's just like, you know, podcasting's like in a black box itself. Mm-hmm. So it is nice to have these little tidbits here and there. Yes. Okay. So now let's talk about our top three most downloaded episodes. So I'm going to guess this is our listener faves.
Yep.
And it starts with Overwhelmed by Code with Susan Robertson.
I have a really hard time with JavaScript. I have a very, very hard time with JavaScript. And I have spent years trying to learn JavaScript and get better at JavaScript and move beyond a jQuery on click action kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's something that just doesn't click with me. And it's very hard. And I've had people mentor me at jobs where it's like, just make this little project that you want, but you don't really have to make it. There's no deadline. It's just the side thing that you're going to make to learn JavaScript. And that went okay. But last summer, I needed to do a password meter for a login form or for a signup form. And I had no idea what to do. And one of the guys I work with, he and I pair programmed via IRC, no less, for about a day or more, where I would try something and he would look at it and we'd had a couple tools where we could share code. And I didn't really want to sit on Hangouts with him because then he's like over your shoulder watching you type. And that's too much. But since we're remote, we kind of made it work with a tool to be able to paste code and share a quick link of that. And then just being able to try to describe as well as I could what was happening or what wasn't happening. And by the end of it, I had a password meter that was functioning mm-hmm. as the designer desired it to function. And that was super gratifying. It took a long time. I mean, you know, most of the guys on my team would have written that password meter probably in half a day, and it took me over a day. But I learned, I learned quite a bit. And I'm not saying I'm great at JavaScript now, but that was much more useful to me because we had a thing and it needed to be built, and I had to kind of get it working.
This is no surprise that this is a top download. You know, I think so many of us in this industry are self-taught and it's such a young industry. It's really a challenge to know where to focus your time. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Susan's advice is practical and realistic mm-hmm. no matter where you are in your career.
Yeah, and I think it's really relatable too. You know, mm-hmm. when I was listening to the episode to prepare for this episode, I felt like I was just sitting and talking to Susan with a beverage of choice because mm-hmm. she's just really honest and open about where she is and why she makes the choices that she does.
Yeah, I feel so grateful that our guests are so open and frank with us.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Which brings us to our second most downloaded episode, which was Practical Pricing with Brad Weaver.
Okay.
So you need to know what you need to make to not only to survive, but to thrive. And this shop rate that is a linchpin of what I, you know, lead people to do is the basis for all pricing calculations. And it's what helps you determine if you're profitable and if the client, their project fits your business needs, whether you can take the work or not. It helps you determine if they're of value to you. And it's basically, it puts you in a position to flip the conversation around and put you in the driver's seat. You're shopping your clients when you do it this way rather than being shopped. And, you know, you only have so many hours in the day. And even if you've got a team, you still collectively have a limited amount of time that you can do this stuff. And you're selling your time for money, and time is the only resource that we can't ever have more of.
Right.
And if you want to thrive in this thing and not struggle and not just basically make a paycheck, you got to find out what it costs to run your business with a profit and determine how much of your time you can give to each client to get there. And that gives you a shop rate that is gospel in my house.
This was such a fantastic episode.
Business-changing episode.
Yes. Talking to Brad was our aha moment personally as a business. And I really liked the no-nonsense, practical way he approached pricing your services. I feel that's what's been missing with a lot of web business advice. It's the specifics. Because everyone can tell you to raise your rates, but Brad helped explain the hows and the whys. So I feel like everyone in the web industry, web business, should listen to this episode and get their head in the right place so they can keep their business running.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, his advice completely changed our business. And I think it's worth noting that that was what, like about a year ago, a little over a year ago?
Yeah.
We are still implementing the advice that he gave us. And so it's not only just something like you pick up and you try, it's super easy to maintain and
tweak.
Well, yeah, and you should be monitoring your pricing all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, businesses change, climates change, clients change. So you have to be on top of that stuff.
Yep. All right, so that brings us to our most downloaded episode. The top downloaded episode of Control Click Cast is Demystifying Web Design for Clients, which is the first in a brand new series we just started this year to help our listeners
and ourselves
communicate better with clients.
I'm shocked.
I kind of am too.
That this is our most downloaded episode, especially because it was a recent episode and it was a Just Us episode.
Yeah, I am shocked as well, but I think it just illustrates that the challenges you and I face when talking to clients is common. It really resonates with our peers. We in the web industry, we get so bogged down in minutiae and buzzwords, especially because when we're talking amongst ourselves, that's how we connect and get the details, you know, worked out. But we can lose sight over the why we're building a site or an app in the first place. And that's what's important to the client. And then we also forget that just because we know what the buzzwords mean doesn't mean our clients do. And that can really, really be detrimental to a business relationship or the project. So here's a clip from that show. You can't lay the foundation until you have the blueprint for the house.
Yeah, so absolutely.
If something, I hate to say it, but if something goes wrong in one of the earlier phases, the best thing to do isn't just to push through. The best thing to do is to take a look at where you are and where the project could be shifted, or, you know, it's not best just to go ahead and soldier on, even though, oh, wow, we completely got our content organization phase wrong.
Right.
Because you'll have a website, but it probably won't do the things you wanted it to do.
Right. And if we take it to the home analogy, it's like, okay, I'm going to pay for this interior decorator to make my house look nice, but I won't repair this leaking foundation.
Right.
Right? So it's like, okay, I'm going to pay a ton of money to make this all look good and feel like home, and yet my basement is flooding.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's why it's so important to invest a lot of time in the earlier parts of a web project, all the things that we mentioned with information architecture and user experience, so that all the things that you see that you might think is only web design is actually just the surface part. We need to build a good foundation for the entire site. So short plug. I'll be diving into this topic even more at EEConf in Denver, Colorado this October. Mm-hmm. But I think this house analogy highlights a very relatable way of explaining the value of a website without mentioning every technical detail.
Yeah, so I think that gives you a flavor of the whole series. So if that episode was popular, I imagine the rest of the episodes in the series will also connect. We dive into how to talk about front-end development with a client, as well as content management with a client. So we also go beyond just design, web design.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, and that brings us to the end of another 100 episodes. I think we should have a blog. So normally at the end of the show, we do a fun rapid-fire Q&A. But for this special episode, we wanted to share some fun facts about Control-Click. So, Leia, what's one of our first facts?
So, we've always championed diversity, mm-hmm. but after a rebrand, we really wanted to be intentional about featuring a wide range of voices on the show. Mm-hmm. So, we were really proud to discover that 60% of all the voices these past 100 episodes are women.
Nice. And while we're highlighting a gender stat, we are also very intentional about talking to people from different countries, of different ages, races, sexual orientations, abilities, and even career trajectories.
Yeah, absolutely. But next fun fact, we love some of our guests so much that they've been on our show 2 or 3 times, especially if you count our EE podcast days.
So not as prestigious as the SNL Five Timers Club, and no one gets a monogram robe, sorry. But shout out to the 2 Timers Club, who are Jess D'Amico, Angie Herrera, Aaron Gustafson, Travis Smith, Carl Crawley, Eric Lamb, John Rogerson, Anna Brown, and Mitchell Kimbrough.
And special thanks also to our 3 Timers Club, Eric Regan, Ryan Masuga, Marcus Netto, and our former digital assistant, Aaron Lewis.
All righty, so let's finish up with one last listener review.
This one is from Josh Smith 01 on Stitcher. He wrote, "The subjects and guests are top notch. The show is produced well and has quick but comfortable cadence. The analysis and thought from the hosts is the best around. I don't always agree with what they think, but I appreciate that they present their ideas to us. The content is always relevant to running a web business or being a web professional. One would do well by tuning in to these leaders in our community."
I'm just smiling like a dope.
I know. I think one of the things I'm most proud of, though, is that people still tune in to what we have to say, even if we disagree. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important point. I think it's healthy to be curious and question assumptions.
And I think that's one of the things that we regularly do on the show. And I think that's a really great note to end on. So to our dear listeners, thank you for tuning in to another 100 episodes. We hope you continue tuning in. Be sure to check out our show notes for links to all of the episodes that we highlighted today.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, .all Conference and Studio VO.
We'd also like to thank our hosting partner, Archistep.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when Jake Jorkovan joins our show to talk strategic partnerships and cold calling. Be sure to check out controlclickcast.com/schedule for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.